Level 2R.
So it's in 2R.
Okay.
We're going to head on.
Level 2R.
Hi.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
Elaine Grant.
James.
Nice to meet you. Lindsay O'Connor.
I'm Elaine Appleton Grant, and this is Platform Americas, the podcast about sharing ideas, culture, and solutions across the Americas. Today on the show, producer Lindsay O'Connor and I went backstage at the Ellie Calkins Opera House for a conversation with Jamie Laurie, better known as Johnny Five of the Denver rap group The Flobots, and Isaac Slade of The Fray.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Great. Isaac, Elaine Grant, nice to meet you, and Lindsay O'Connor.
Hi, Isaac.
And we are with Platform America's podcast. And
we're rolling.
Can we go into the green room?
Yeah.
They just performed on stage at the Biennial of the Americas Festival in Denver to an international crowd, audience members from practically every country in Latin America and all over the U.S. Both Jamie and Isaac use their music for social change. The Flobots are known for starting Youth on Record, which teaches at-risk youth to make music and encourages them to stay in school. Jamie's more recent effort is No Enemies, which brings protest music to today's social movements. The Flobots' latest album is also called No Enemies. Isaac Slade's music with The Fray is very different, but like Jamie, he's trying to change the world. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper recently asked Isaac to co-chair Take Note, an effort to bring music instruction to every student in public school in the state. We spent time talking about what drives them to be more than entertainers and the role music plays in social protest. And listen for their impromptu performance of Jamie Laurie's rap, Simultaneous Translation, with Isaac Slade on the piano with Jamie for the first time. Welcome to Platform Americas, Jamie Laurie and Isaac Slade.
Thank you.
You two were on a panel at the Biennial Americas because you're both using music for social activism. Do you think that's the right way to put it?
We accept a lot of the accusations hurled at us, where people see us as a political band or, we do activism through music. I think we've always just looked at it as one thing. I mean, we're expressing ourselves, and part of what you express is, when you see the world, you have things to say about it, right? So if the world pains you, then you speak to that pain. And then I think also what we were talking about up there is just how you use the way you do your work to kind of be an asset to the larger community that might be addressing something. So every time you create a concert, you're kind of like holding a worship service. I mean, it feels like you're going to church. And people in that room are there for a transformative experience. And if you can bring people through the door and talk a little bit about whatever the issue is, climate change or mass incarceration or anything, and have people leave feeling empowered and connected to a larger community that's going to do something about that issue, then I think you've done your job as a convener of that particular church.
We have never quite been as outspoken as these guys for causes. And it's actually been a struggle and somewhat of a discussion. So we've kind of played it safe on that. And I'm really new to the space of giving back, really. And I started working on an initiative about a year ago for music education in the state. And it's been awesome. It's so great to use kind of my days and nights and a lot of the phone numbers I've collected over the years to start doing an effort that's non-musical.
Let's talk very specifically about that.
Yes.
So for our listeners, you're chairing an initiative, and I've forgotten the name of it.
I'm co-chairing with the governor an initiative of his doing called Take Note Colorado. And it's basically this harebrained idea he has that Colorado can be the first state in the country where every single kid, kindergarten through senior year in high school, can learn to play music if they want. Any genre, any instrument, hopefully within reason that we can get a hold of, and access to that instrument and instruction. And it's uncovered some really interesting things about the state. We have schools that don't have any music, like not even a textbook lecture class on music.
There's not even a zither or a tabla.
Nigh a tabla can be found. And it's been really eye-opening and difficult in that regard, but also really hopeful because people much smarter than I are you know, coming up with a timeline and a plan and a budget for how we can get schools equipped, and then how to turbo boost the amazing schools that we already have.
When you've found a school where there is not a note of music, not any instruction at all to be found, what's been the response to you and to the idea of this initiative in a school like that?
Well, to be honest, we haven't really done much yet. We started in earnest probably February, and then kind of researched the state, and we've been working so much on kind of the stance and the tone more than anything that we don't want to come in and like tell everybody how to fix something that they know much better than us. But for the most part, it's unfunded mandates that, you know, the state requires a school to have music but doesn't necessarily have the resources to help them pay for it. So they're just in a weird gray area, and we want to come in and fill the gaps.
Now, in this way, you have a lot in common because you've been working on teaching youth through music for a long time. Can you talk about what you've done?
Sure. I mean, as a band, we've kind of, over the years, experimented with a number of different ways to use our platform. And one of them early on was we started a nonprofit just a little before, actually, we kind of had our, you know, break as a band. That was called Flowbots.org at the time, but came to be known as Youth on Record. We combined with another group that was called Youth on Record, and so several programs became one. And it works in schools and treatment facilities, high school and then kind of post-high school students who are still working on making sure that they graduate or get a GED. And the musical programs are 4-credit classes at this point. They're classes that are often positioned, you know, first period, sixth period, right after lunch, so that strategically, so that students who are having attendance issues will show up because they're learning to make beats, they're learning to write raps or play an instrument, and they're working with artists from the Denver area. Musicians, rappers themselves, you know, beat makers. And so they're learning from professionals, and they're getting kind of brought back into the educational environment along the spectrum of like, hey, music, that this is a piece of education you really value. Now let's be here for these other classes that you need to graduate. And so what's been beautiful, I think, for me as an artist is that early on we didn't know what we were doing. We just knew we wanted to do something. And it was the organization was very different in the beginning, and it took a few years to figure out where our source of strength was. We were working actually, you know, nationally for a little bit. We were trying to mobilize fans nationally to create community service projects in their communities. It was an entirely different organization, and that sort of had a little moment, but then didn't work. And we said, what is our strength? Our strength is Denver. People love us here, even if the band's, you know, notoriety fades, which it did. We have Denver. We have people here that love what we do and want to get involved. And we invited those people to step into the organization. And so, you know, we had folks step in as staff. Our current executive director, Jamie Duffy, came on as a board member and then moved to the director position. And they brought dreams to the table. They brought visions to the table. And they brought skills to the table. And they helped to transform our little fledgling organization founded by a band into something that has become very vibrant. So at this point, I'm not on the board. I actually don't know as much about the organization these days. I just kind of look on it as a proud parent would and say, this is something that I helped start in the beginning, but now the Denver community has embraced it and made what it is today.
And we're borrowing that model even. We talk about Youth on Record a lot for how to build something that outlives all of us.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just a pet project that kind of comes and goes. And,
yeah.
And one of the hopes that we have at Take Note is kind of coming into it as a new player, really partnering with the folks that are doing the great work and just kind of convening the governor's resources and some philanthropy and more business leaders and stuff to really come alongside and just like help in some way toward that kind of common goal.
Can you take me back to the conversation? Did the governor call you? Did you run into him over a beer? I mean, what happened?
He cornered me actually at his house with
the dark alley,
10 yeah. other people. Yeah, it was a lot of beer. I remember that. And I remember he's got a guy named Jamie Van Leeuwen. He's like a chief of doing
advisor.
Stuff. Like if Jamie's not on the call, it doesn't actually happen. So Jamie brought his secret weapon as well, which is his 70-something mother. She's like a second grade teacher, and they sat her right next to me, and the whole time, you know, it was just a fun dinner. And then at one point somebody casually mentioned like you know what could really be good for this town? Some kind of music initiative. And then they all started talking, and I realized quickly everybody knew what they were talking about except me. And I was like, wow, they need somebody to run this thing. This is interesting. I wonder who they're going to get. And then at some point, and it was John in the middle across the table from me. And then to his right was Pat Stryker, who's, you know, one of the lead kind of left thinking, left leading Democrats in the state, kind of leading the charge for the blues. And then to his right was Libby Anschutz, who's basically the opposite captain of the red team. And they were both like, all three of them were like finishing each other's sentences about how great this idea is. And then all three of them turned to me and said, would you lead this thing? And then Jamie's mom, she touched my arm and she goes, why wouldn't you do it? And then it was it. I said, I gotta talk to my wife and I'll call you tomorrow. So that's how it was.
That is just a dynamite story. And what I particularly like about it is that you've got, you know, these leaders of both mm-hmm. the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in Colorado coming together over the idea of teaching kids music. And then do you feel like that dinner was a setup? Like everybody knew that's why you were there? Or was it just a coincidence?
It was an absolute, like, operation set up. They did it totally on purpose, and it was a home run, slam dunk. But I mean, I'm so attracted to bipartisan ideas, and I think John is a walking bipartisan idea. Mm-hmm. He looks like a Republican, acts like a Democrat, mm-hmm. and he speaks both languages. And you know, just the fact that those two women were at the table, let alone proposing an idea and pooling their resources, and both of them have been, they're both on the board. They've been like instrumental in getting this thing off the ground. So it's been
no
awesome.
No pun intended.
That's great. Isaac, there's a quote here from an article, I'm not sure when the article happened, where you said, I feel like I am on Earth to build bridges between people. Do you remember that story?
I do not. Sounds kind of like something I'd say.
Do you reject it?
Yes,
would
no.
you like to repudiate that statement right here?
Do you still feel that way?
I do, actually, yeah. I think I keep finding myself in rooms, for years I have, where like everybody's on one side or the other, and I'm sort of the only one like caught in the crossfire. And I'm also the only one that sort of gets why everybody's pissed off and what they hate about the other side. And I've just noticed over and over again, like, oh, I know why they want to hurt those people. And I know why those people want to hurt those people. And then I just start, you know, repeating what I hear people saying. And it's fascinating watching people let their guard down when they feel heard and they get touched with empathy and compassion. And I love it. And I think I did that for years in my family. And I think I still do that in my band. I try to do that. And to some extent, like with my art, I feel like I make therapy songs for everybody that won't go. Mm-hmm.
Talk about no enemies. Music as a technology of shared collective power.
So we had a mentor in the band, even before we were a band, a man named Vincent Harding. And he, as well known to some folks, he you know, worked with Martin Luther King Jr., actually wrote some of his more critical speeches. And then, you know, lived here in Denver and never stopped mentoring people, never stopped encouraging people, and especially young people, because he saw, you know, younger generations as pivotal to social change. And so growing up, for both my co-Flobot, Brer Rabbit, and I, he was a constant presence. And he would always encourage us to say, like, you know, that's great that you guys have a band, and but where are the songs for today's movements? We'd say, well, we're making songs. You know, we're made an album. We have a song that went platinum. And he'd say, oh, that's good. Well, where are the songs for today's social movements? And he would ask this question pretty much every time we got together. And we knew what he meant. I mean, we knew he meant songs like We Shall Overcome and Which Side Are You On and Wade in the Water and songs that had been technology for Southern Freedom Movement, songs that were borrowed from Negro spirituals and that actually I've since learned really, that idea was as strange to folks then as it might be to people now to say, let's take songs from 100 years ago. It wasn't a natural fit. There were people that said, I don't know about this idea. A few years ago, Dr. Harding in 2014 passed away. And when he died, it was really clear to us that we had a calling, that we needed to kind of answer his question. And that we could no longer just make the excuses of, well, you know, I'm a rapper, I'm not really a singer, or, well, we're making you know, we're a band, we're making studio songs, we're not going to go make songs for the street. And we needed to start making those songs for the street. So we called the project No Enemies because we think if you really want your social movement to be successful, you shouldn't think in terms of us and them. You can't think in terms of us and them. You need to think in terms of inviting everybody to be part of it. And the most invitational possible thing is music, is songs. Any dream can become a nightmare if we never wake from it. Any person can seem like a devil when their story and history are lost to lies. We are blinded by falsehoods and weak mythology. We are called to wake. We are called to rise. The opposite of oppression is liberation. Together, we can confront the blood-stained chapters of our stories and write with new ink pages of reconciliation and forgiveness. It is time for an exorcism, to expel the demons which have separated us, to purge our souls from the toxic claims of whiteness, to walk gloriously into that great truth we have always known. We are family. And so we just simply started gathering people in rooms and saying, what are some songs we could all sing together? What are songs all of us know? If we all ran out in the streets right now, what would we sing together? How might we change those words to fit the issue? And the second we started doing it, people were responsive. People had ideas for songs. People reclaimed old songs, remixed current songs. And, you know, that was a time when Black Lives Matter movement was full force. And so we found a lot of need, a lot of new people coming into movements who were saying, what do we do when we get out there besides just put our fists in the air or chant? And we found that something that seemed almost like a surface kind of afterthought type of issue, like, oh, well, once we get there, we need something to sing, was actually really this fundamental kind of cultural crisis that if we just show up, if all protest is, oh, I saw a Facebook event and I showed up with a group of strangers and we stood on a corner or we chanted this lowest hanging chant, then you're not empowered. You don't want to go back. You feel awkward. But if what you do is you have a group of people that regularly get together to sing, you know those people, you care about multiple different issues, and then when something happens, you show up and you have some songs in common, you know, then it's an empowering experience. You show up at the Denver airport and you show up on the day when the travel ban has been announced and people are at airports all over the country, and suddenly you hear, oh, refugees are welcome here. Oh, refugees are welcome here. And people start to join in. How I love thee as my neighbor. Refugees are welcome here. Sure. That's empowering.
If somebody heard this episode of the podcast and they said, I want to be involved with that, how would they do it?
Well, we do have a No Enemies Facebook page, and we have some of the songs up on our flowbots.com, you know, website. We have a mass choir and a second line band that we recorded 12 movement songs that we think are especially relevant, and people can listen there. We have a little songbook that people could download from the same website. So, and then we hold regular events when we're in town and have time. To kind of convene people and practice this. So, yeah, find us on the internet, I guess, is the best way. Or just start, you know what, you don't need us, just start singing. We're at your book club, at your church, start singing songs, start asking the question, because really, it's a lens. And once you shift that lens, we found that the songs just start pouring out. There's tons of songs we can all sing together. We just have to, like, relinquish the myth that we don't do that in this culture.
Before we stop rolling, is there anything I didn't ask you about? I mean, this was pretty quick, pretty spontaneous. Anything that you really want to talk about that I didn't get a chance to ask you?
What I found is that when you, depending on your lens, it'll flip the paradigm of like how you see this country. Because I think we're used to experiencing our country as like exceedingly privileged. And we just take it for granted. Like we have everything. We have the material wealth. We have the resources. We're the rich country. Mm. But if you start looking at it as the courage to sing a song in public, for example, we're not the rich country. We had a friend come to one of our workshops, and she said, she was from South Africa, and she said, "Oh, that's so fascinating. You guys have to practice." When we have a tragedy in my hometown or something happens, we just gather to the in the center of the village and we all mourn together by singing. We just do that. But she said, "No, you do. I'm not making fun of you. You do have to practice." And you can almost hear, not quite condescension, but she's like, "Oh, we have something and you are deprived. There's a poverty of that cultural connectedness." And we could talk about how it's related to whiteness and erasing our cultures through that process, but we don't have to talk about that now. But just to know that in the hemispheres, there are many resources and they're renewable resources. Singing together in public, that's renewable. And it's going away some other places too when radio comes along or when other things come along, but it's also there and rich and vibrant. And so we should value that and stop thinking that we have everything already, because there's a lot that we don't have.
I don't know. I think one of the most interesting things I see going on is people on both sides of any argument that they're just starting to recognize that it's not the us versus them thing. It's not even like us helping them or us getting their help. It's like dawning on people that like one side actually needs the other. Mm-hmm. And like, you pick a side. You can go to politics, you can go to gender, you can go to whatever you want, education. I've just started hearing like the guys with PhDs that work in this space and have the women that have books, they're starting to say this new thing is happening that, I don't know if it's empathy or compassion or whatever, podcasts like this, but people are just starting to recognize the symbioticness beats the battle thing. Mm-hmm. Like our parents and our grandparents did the battle thing forever and it was good. Like we got really well-formed ideologies out of it, but now like nobody hangs out and nobody talks to people that are different than them, or very few do. And I think poverty is the right word for it. Like if you take the money lens off and just look at the connection lens, it's not working. It's like generations have proven that it's getting worse, not better. And the people that are doing really interesting things are the ones that are able to speak, you know, both languages.
I loved the piece that you did, Jamie, in the beginning. I wonder if it's possible for you to recreate it for us.
I mean, mine was a cappella, so I'd be happy to do it again.
I'd love that.
And then you can think of what you want to play, I guess.
I'll do it.
Unless there's a way to combine, I mean, that would really be...
That would be very cool, wouldn't it? That'd be very cool.
We have to decide what we want to see, which desires we want to affirm as we have to consider who we want to be, what defines and guides us as we call our country free. We have to decide, hay que decidir, cual intenciones queremos in this Nike Pepsi beer commercial fantasy we see on television. Let's be clear, there's a war on for our minds, and one weapon is fear. Una guerra para nuestros mientes, nos ataquen con temor y con tantas fantasías. And at our country's borderlines, we implement decisions based on who we think we are. En las fronteras vemos quién somos, si vamos a gritar a los que quieren trabajar por muchas horas y cuidar a sus niños y familia. That's horrible. Bizarre. If we yell at those who want to raise a family and work hard, then what is the alternative? Hay que considerar los alternativos. Would we prefer people's children starve? Preferemos que no comen. Hay que orientarnos en el mundo que queremos construir en el futuro. Which values do we value, and how can we secure those? Cuando los valores más básicos de la vida conflictan con las leyes y con las políticas, entonces la pregunta, the question here remains, which one has to change? We have to decide what we want to see, which desires we want to affirm as we have to consider who we want to be, what defines and guides us as we call our country free.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for talking to us.
That was Isaac Slade of The Fray playing piano and Jamie Laurie, better known as Johnny Five, of The Flowbots. Both musicians are based in Denver. You can find out more about The Flowbots, The Fray, No Enemies, Youth on Record, and Take Note at kunc.org. If you're listening to this from the Denver metro area, The Flowbots are on tour this fall and will play the Larimer Lounge in Denver on November 17th. As always, thanks for being with us on Platform Americas. The show is produced by me, Elaine Appleton-Grant, with assistance from KUNC News Director Michael DeJuana and the public radio station's staff. The Biennial of the Americas brings our podcast to KUNC. This episode is sponsored by the Bonfey Stanton Foundation. The Bonfey Stanton Foundation works to enrich the vibrant cultural community of Denver by supporting arts and nonprofit leadership that are critical to improving the lives of citizens throughout the region. Our theme music, Redoble, comes to us from the band Orquesta Mendoza. Thanks to the University of Colorado Denver for their support. See you soon.